The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You're listening to the Best Morning Routine Ever podcast, the show that proves no one stumbles upon success ever. With your host, Lou Need. Every Mondays and Thursdays, we deliver cold hard evidence behind the power of a robust morning routine. Get ready to be transformed by the renewal of your mind.
Hello, morning enthusiasts. Welcome to the Best Morning Routine Ever podcast. Today, I have the privilege of introducing a very special guest to the show, Roman Prokopchuk. He is first generation immigrant from Ukraine. He had an opportunity to do digital marketing for a financial service company right out of college. He was handed a packet on CEO and was told, take 2 months to read this and figure out how to do it online. And as a driven individual as he is, he did just that. And this started his career in digital marketing, where he became the guru for CEO, paid search, social media, analytics, content strategy, and other digital discipline. In 2012, Nova Zora Digital was born, a full-service digital marketing agency where Roman helps clients reach success online through digital marketing. Roman, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. Thank you for inviting me on.
My pleasure. I'm excited to have you on board to hear your story. You are truly a servant leader. You are a giver. And I know a little bit about your background, but I'm looking forward to one, talking about marketing, but also what it's like being a foster parent and why do you get into it? So tell us, go ahead and tell the audience a little bit about your background. You were telling me just now that you had, as a foster parent, you had three new boys that you had to take on just last night for a short-term stay. What is life like as a foster parent?
It's very unpredictable. Me and my wife have been foster parents since June 2018 when we got licensed. Since then, we've had 13 kids in our home. The first placement we've got in June 1st was a sibling set, two brothers that we had for a year, and we were told we were going to adopt, but they ended up getting reunified with their biological mother. And right now we have another long-term placement. And like you said, we had five kids last night. The prior night for the weekend, we had four kids in our home. So it's very hectic, but it's very rewarding, and it takes a lot of stuff in terms of that you can correlate and move over to a business sense, and in terms of adding or developing listening skills, helping people before yourself, and kind of adds, I think it made me a better leader, a kind of segue into that. The reason why we became foster parents is in the last 3 years, we had kind of an infertility battle. So we've had five miscarriages in the last 3 years. So we thought we're still trying naturally, but we also thought we can help kids as well as possibly adopt out of the foster care system.
Truly a remarkable thing that you do. Now, when you get these kids, you need the space. You need the room to shelter them, correct? So you have a bigger space specifically for that.
Yeah, I mean, the way the foster care system like registers homes, I think it's per bedroom. And if the kids are related, you can, you know, have more kids in a bedroom. But our house is technically registered for or licensed for seven kids. So we can have up to seven kids in our home legally, according to the state of New Jersey. So five was the most we've ever had. Before that, we've had four, but usually it's about two kids.
You're giving back. How's that help you? You mentioned with leadership, and it transcends to business.
Well, these kids are coming from situations where, you know, they're not in control, and it's not their fault what's happened to them. It's obviously their guardian stuff that's happened to them or things that they've seen. So kind of listening to them and really understanding them and making them feel as comfortable as possible. So I think any leader, if you're leading a team, if you're a director, a vice president, or a company, I think it's important for your team members to feel safe, like they can tell you anything, and for you to kind of protect them in a sense, because ultimately, you know, success and failure falls on the leader regardless of, you know, what happened. So I think taking on responsibility in that sense really heightens it and really turns it around where you're kind of, like you mentioned, like a servant leader. So in terms of kind of my style for leadership and digital marketing, I like to be in the trenches and a practitioner, because there's a lot of generalists that, you know, read stuff and just say stuff. And I like to jump in regardless of the roles I've held in the past, even as a director, people managing. If I had a specialist, a social media specialist, SEO specialist that needed help, I would jump in there and hands on help them, because when you teach them the first time how to do something correctly, most likely, you know, that thing that they may have messed up, they'll learn from it and do it right the next time.
Yeah, teaching by example, and also you teach them right the first time, then you don't have to reteach it over and over again. I really like that notion. So what are some other ways that you've helped clients through digital marketing?
Yeah, so kind of the core focus, or, you know, what I started with search engine optimization and kind of moved into social media, a paid search, content strategy, analytics. So basically helping clients optimize their websites so they're getting the right traffic organically. If it's a brick and mortar business, focusing on local search and getting kind of those local results where, you know, people look for physical locations and how to get to a business. And then really exploring and building brands through social, paid and organic, because that's still undertapped and underutilized source. And it's still relatively cheap from a paid perspective.
Building brand, I know it can take a while to actually get your name out there, get your name to get to be known and be heard, get your logo set up. How does one deal and build a brand?
I think first, just develop some kind of presence. So if you're not on any social media platforms, I'm not saying, you know, if you're a specific business, you don't necessarily need to be on every social media platform, but you should at least have a profile built in terms of kind of protecting your brand and building it. And to begin with, putting that information out that differentiates your brand from your competitors, mainly kind of the human side of it. Because, you know, if you're, let's say, an e-commerce store and everybody else is an e-commerce store selling something else, who are the people behind the scenes, you know, telling your story? So obviously my story is with foster care. I've, you know, dealt with some losses, giving back in terms of being, you know, a hands-on leader. So that kind of really moves the needle oftentimes in terms of, you know, who are you actually going to work with?
Yeah, because your story is unique. Not only is it unique, but it's unique to you, and in specialized, it's tailored towards you. And so no one else will have that similar story in the same field, right?
Yep. And then obviously making your unique value proposition. So why you're better. I mean, oftentimes if it's a specific product, it may not necessarily be better. It may be the same exact thing, but that branding will make you stand out and be top of mind, because you want to have an emotional connection with a person online. So that kind of emotional trigger, either good or bad, that's what you remember in terms of memories across, in terms of your personal and professional life. You know, the birth of a child, the loss of a loved one, the promotion, the layoff, that's, you know, emotional trigger associated to that event.
Yeah. And emotions drive behavior. Emotions, John, to being a great storyteller will actually get people to act quicker if you just give them the facts. Those are dry. No, nobody has time for that. Nobody want to hear that. But if people have a need to connect, and if your story resonate with them, you tap into their emotion, then they are able to actually support you.
Yep.
You call it the unique value proposition. How do you stand out? What is your story, and how do you effectively tell your story? I want to get into how can others motivate themselves, because you've experienced some loss, you know, 5 miscarriages. How did you and your wife, how do you deal with that? How do you overcome that barrier to actually see a different way to care for kids, to give back, to give your love? Because you have a lot of love to give. So you found a different outlet by being a foster parent. You didn't just feel defeated. you know, after each miscarriage, but somehow you found some power, you found some motivation, you found some inspiration to get up and actually be a foster parent.
Yep. And
how can people overcome some barriers like you have?
Yeah, and two of which were on Christmas Day, which was even more, you know, heartbreaking. But I think nobody can be motivated 100% of the time. The stuff you see on social media is just a filter of someone's life. So people just put up a bunch of motivational quotes doesn't mean themselves are motivated or can tell you that you should be motivated. I mean, it's you versus you. So ultimately, every day you're going to get up and something may bother you, or every day there is something that bothers you or holds you down from an emotional standpoint or something else. But I mean, I'm coming from a background also seeing physical abuse, you know, domestic abuse when I was younger. So when I was a child, I told myself, you know, when I would grow up, I would be a better father or father figure to kids. You know, when I, you know, have kids of my own or I'm entrusted to take care of other kids. So I think I kind of ran with that. And I think it's a day-to-day process, and whatever helps you get out of that rut, if you have to take 5-10 minutes just to pray, meditate, you know, some people need like a, you know, kick in the butt basically. So watch something inspirational and get kind of those endorphins going. Maybe go for a walk or go to the gym before you start working, kind of give you a better focus. But taking it to that kind of negative aspect, you can only go, you know, one or two roads, either positive or negative. You can either feel bad for yourself, you know, start, you know, slacking or getting off your morning or everyday routine, stop going to the gym, stop kind of taking care of yourself, and then you'll probably fall into a depression. But if you kind of keep going, it gets a little bit easier. I'm not saying, you know, I understand everybody's situations, but at least for me, dealing with loss and grief and stuff like that, I think it's a natural part of life. Eventually in life, someone's going to go through it, and it's how you react to it. It's how you kind of manage those scars. And then it prepares you for some things down the line that may be even worse that you can cope with a little better.
It strengthens that muscle a little more.
Yep.
Yeah, because it's unavoidable, as you say, grieving. And I know you just talk about, and grieving is not an easy aspect, but it is part of life. People go into better places. People stop suffering is how I see it. I just had my neighbor passed away last week, and it's tragic. And you were just saying you lost your grandfather not too long ago.
It was a few months, but he had a stroke, and then he was in the hospital for about 8 days, which I was by his side. And he had another massive stroke. And at that point, his body started shutting down and he couldn't breathe his own. So they made a decision to kind of take the breathing tube out and let him naturally kind of pass.
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard. It's hard. It's hard to deal with. But I view it as the suffering ends for them. You know, it breaks our heart though for those who are left behind. But when that happens, there's reassurance. And I'm very spiritual. There's reassurance that they're in a better place and the suffering ends. The suffering ends for them, because just watching them deteriorate is just, it's not fun. You know, it sucks. And so I commend you, and I thank you for sharing your story and for being such a great servant. You're giving back in tremendous ways. And for anyone that listening, that thinking about being a foster parent, what are some things that they should consider or think about? What are some things that they don't know that they should know if considering being a foster parent?
Well, you need a flexible schedule. I work remotely majority of the time, and my wife's back in school and still working. So she has kind of like the mandatory, she has to be in a location. But a lot of the time, like with any other child, your biological kids, with foster kids, you have a lot more to consider. They're coming from situations that you may not 100% fully understand or grasp, and how to help those kids coming from abuse, neglect, malnutrition. And they have a lot of things going on in their lives, too. They have visits oftentimes multiple times a week with their biological parents or guardians. They have to see a therapist, see a nurse, see a healthcare professional. So oftentimes you have to be there several times a week to basically go with the child to a visit, or, you know, a therapy session, or work around kind of their schedule. So that's very important. And I think when you go into training, because you have an orientation, then you do about in New Jersey, about 40 something hours of in-class training. And then you have like a 10-month process for them to review kind of your background, your references. So it's very tedious to your home, and you have a story told about like your family and what your family goals are. So it's kind of having the time and the patience to go through that, and then taking things as they come, because you may get attached to children like we did, or told something that changes, because things change very fast with cases. So one minute you may be told, are you willing to adopt these kids? And you're thinking you're going to adopt a child. And the next minute, you know, they're being taken out of your home and reunified with a parent. So you have to have a little bit of thick skin, and some of the stuff they tell you in training in any state is probably a little sugar-coated to get you, obviously, to become a foster parent. But the things you go through make a lot of difference. And, you know, the things you deal with the system can be kind of brushed down for the impact you're actually giving back to these kids and changing their lives. Even sometimes for a night at the time, they can see that, you know, there's better things out there, and people do care, and there are safe homes, not necessarily the ones that they originally came from.
And that's what drives you. That's what motivates you to give him that glimpse of a normal life.
Yep, that and everything. I mean, probably 10 years ago, career-wise, I would have probably said I'm focusing on money and like material goals. But as you get older, most people kind of can make money, and it's easily gained or lost. But leaving a legacy and giving back, either in this sense, and also I do a lot of pro bono stuff, so people just reach out and I try to help them in terms of giving them at least the right direction to go. If they can't obviously afford my services or afford any other time, I'm more than willing to kind of jump on the phone and give people feedback and give people direction in that sense, and actionable items in that sense. And then just giving back. I mean, there's so much negative news out there. Just doing one nice thing a day can really mean a difference, big or small.
Yeah, you're adding value to other people's lives, and that you can't put a price on. It's that good feeling, but also knowing that we are designed to help each other. We are designed to serve one another, and you depict that 100%, Roman. Thank you for all that you do. Tell us a little bit about your morning routine. I know you got to be flexible. You got to probably be running to meetings with the kids. You do work remotely, so that actually works in your advantage. But I can imagine you got to keep your schedule open for whatever the kids that you are housing may need. Tell us about your morning routine. How do you get mentally ready to give so much of yourself, open up your home like you do, and then run your successful digital marketing business? Tell us about your morning routine.
Yeah, oftentimes it's just one of those things like you have to do it. I think even beginning to be a foster parent, there was that element of fear or anything new in life. So you have to kind of get past it. But probably waking up at like 6:45, 7 in the morning, getting the kids dressed, which we have two kids that are at long-term placement, getting them dressed, getting them ready for preschool. The preschool is about a mile away from the home, so only takes a few minutes to get there. So by, I would say, at latest 7:45, 7:50, getting them to preschool, getting back. If my wife's not at work or not in school, she's helping me with that kind of stuff. And then getting back, taking care of my two dogs. First thing, kind of read something or do something that kind of motivates me, make a cup of coffee, stand. I like actually standing a lot when I'm working. I think I stay a little bit more focused and awake. So I have the option of a standing desk or a sitting desk. And I think anyone that's been sitting a long time, try it out. It may give you a little bit more energy. And at that point, kind of answer some emails and then make a kind of to-do list of the day's priorities. Because a lot of stuff can be outsourced or can wait. But what are those things that are going to really move the needle? And I think for me, the first thing in the morning is where I have the most focus. So getting as many things done in the morning and, you know, adequate amount of time really helps.
Mm-hmm. Time blocking first thing in the morning, because you are most alert. I agree with you. Studies have shown that we are fresh. We woken up and we are ready to go. We are alert, and so it's best to utilize that time frame to get creative work done. The creative juices are flowing. And so I love your to-do list. And you said something very that stands out very much to me is delegate. To get your to-do list down and see how you prioritize. What can be done now? What can be done later? And what can be eliminated altogether or automated to actually free up your time?
Yep, because a lot of stuff you may focus on or jump around that, you know, you can delegate to somebody else, and some things may not be as important as you thought, because ultimately people say they can multitask, but doing a little bit of something just, you know, to the minimal of your abilities and doing a few of those things, I tend to just do one thing really well and kind of move on to the next. Sometimes I get scatterbrained. I think everybody else does as well. Mm-hmm. But I think finishing that one thing or as many of those important tasks at the beginning of the day really kind of sets you up. And then if you have to get up for a second, go for a walk. If you're in an office, walk around the floor or go outside for a second and kind of compose yourself and get your focus back, because a lot of time mentally people hit roadblocks by the stuff they're dealing with or simply lack of focus, and they can't just get focused again. Going to the gym actually helps me too, kind of midday on a regular day to gain a little boost of energy and then continue my day from there.
Yeah, it's a good way to break the day off so you can work the rest of it. Yeah, I really like the standing desk portion of it. We get the option at work, and they should opt for it, because when we're sitting way too much, and people don't go for walks either. Like, I see my coworkers who current or former coworkers that, you know, they sit there for 7 hours. They eat at their desk. They do everything at their desk. I'm like, man, I can't, after 2 hours, I'm like, I need to stretch. I need to go for a walk.
Yeah, it gets mundane, and it like leads to kind of complacency in terms of imagination and creativity, in my opinion. And if you look at and read some studies, there's a lot of executive teams and like senior business professionals that are doing walking meetings. Mm. So like that energy is getting picked up, so new ideas can be kind of, you know, come about from something rather than you're getting exercise, you're outdoors. And you're not necessarily sitting in the same room you've been in 100 times.
Oh, real. Yeah. Really, really well put. Tell us, how can we connect with you? How do we get in contact with your agency? What are your social media handles?
Yep. Roman Prokopchuk on all social media. You can find me there. You can go to NovaZorDigital.com. I also have a podcast where I interview business leaders and other people about their business journeys and personal journeys, how they got to where they are now. So that's the Digital Savage Experience podcast. So you can just Google my name and you'll get to something that, you know, contacts me in one way or another.
Thank you for sharing, Roman. This has been insightful, and we got to learn a lot about foster parenting from you today. Really appreciate that. And of course, on digital marketing, how to set a presence for branding, to develop a presence on social media, but also to be unique, to actually bring in that human side, tell your story and then tell it effectively so that you do stand out, and also giving back. Your life is around the opportunity to give back to others, and you're fostering, you know, 5 kids at the moment, and you do it with a giving heart. And it just, it adds value, because it says you got to be able to add value to other people, no matter what you're doing, no matter what field you're, whatever endeavor. It's like, how can you serve other people? Because that's the beauty. That's the core of living a meaningful life. And so I thank you so much for coming on the show and for sharing with us today. I will, of course, Roman, see you at the top of your best morning routine ever. Thanks for coming.
I appreciate you having me on. Thank you.
My pleasure. All right, morning enthusiasts. Thank you for listening. Please go ahead and rate and review the show. Until next time, be blessed.
All right, morning enthusiasts. That's it for today's show. Thank you for tuning in. If you love the Best Morning Routine Ever podcast, we'd love to hear from you. So go ahead and subscribe, rate, and give a review on iTunes or Google Play. While you're at it, tell a friend about the show. Be sure to visit bestmorningroutineever.com and our Facebook group to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover our fantastic free bonus content. Until next time.